The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the finest radio station in the country and the best state in the union. Southeastern New England and Rhode Island I'm talking about. This is Intellectual Medicine. I'm Dr. Steve Pettirudi, and today we've got a treat for you. We're going to be talking about the influenza immunization. What do you think about it? Should you get it? What are the risks? What are the benefits? We're going to have on the show in the next section Dr. David Lowe, one of the finest infectious disease specialists really in the state and in the country. He'll be weighing in on this topic, and we'll be listening to his advice and other topics to cover. Can fluoride hurt an unborn baby, and should you be concerned about that? And what about youth football and brain health? Artificial sweeteners, an update on whether or not they can actually help or hurt your effort to lose weight. Some interesting new information on that front. And finally, we have to review it again from the Journals of Gerontology, the ongoing evolving information regarding anti-aging, life extension, and the role of hormonal therapy. So there's updates on all fronts. But first, we have to talk about what's happening locally. And that, the big news story is Style Week is happening up at the convention center. Nick, I had to go there, brother. You know, I said, do you want to help sponsor this? I said, well, what's it about? They said, it's, you know, beautiful people and fabulous clothing. I said, sign us up.
Of course. Why not?
Why not, right? You know, we are intellectual medicine. We're about the 120-year, the aspiration to live as long as you can, as healthy as you can. The real point of all that is so you can have a good time, right? I mean, why live longer if you're going to be, like, miserable?
Exactly.
So I think this
is
one.
You want to live it to the fullest all the way through, right?
Absolutely, Nick. And there's a connection here, you know, between Style Week, the state of Rhode Island, economic development, life extension, and how does it all tie together? And it has to do with one aspect, that is cash flow equals life. If you've got enough money in your pocket, I'm not implying that it's the only thing, but try doing without it. Try suffering the consequence of financial depravity, and it will affect your health, and it's well established. It correlates with lifespan, wellness, and to a certain degree, satisfaction. There's too much emphasis placed merely on the unemployment rate. One of the things we really need to be looking at is how do we help the Rhode Islanders make more money? And here's a tie into Style Week. You know, Rhode Island's legacy is in textiles, fashion. That's where RISD came from. And, you know, I've been all over the country, and I've lived in different places when I was in the Army. And one thing that stands out when you go other places and you come back to Rhode Island is just how beautiful it is and how fantastic the restaurants are and how fabulous the artistic outlets are.
Beautiful place to live, really.
And that's what we need to be cultivating. You know, that's our unique element. I got news for the state leaders. Amazon is not coming to Rhode Island with their 50,000 jobs, right? That's window dressing. It's an opiate for the people, the hope of the future. Oh, boy, Amazon's not coming here, competing with Boston for Amazon. I mean, it's nice that we have this little, you know, this little Wexford technology thing going on. That's cute. I like it. But you're not competing with San Francisco and Boston and New York with their expansive population base. However, they cannot compete with us as far as geographic and artistic beauty. So I like what's happening in some of these things. The state legislation did something kind of quiet that I think is worthy of amplifying. They passed legislation to facilitate a 5G network throughout the state. Now, why is that important? Well, 5G is super speed on the internet, and we all know how important that is. It creates an infrastructure for the development of modern businesses. And that's what the state should be doing to help facilitate business, right? It's not economic development by bribery. Hey, come to Rhode Island, I'll give you $100 million. It's economic development by creating a fertile ground for businesses to grow in. So we're hopeful, we at Intellectual Medicine, that the governor will take it upon herself to veto the pension bill that was recently passed that will give automatic consideration for any heart disease acquired by a firefighter to get automatic disability, that is a presumption that heart disease is caused by the job. Here's my proposal for every disability pension everywhere. Nobody should have a more robust and more abundant disability plan than the U.S. military. Who has a greater at-risk job than the guys fighting wars? I have news for you. You get a heart attack in the Army, you're not getting the 100%er unless it's severe. You're still going to be rehabilitated and get your worldwide deployable. So that's what I think we should do with this, with a sick leave and developing Rhode Island. We need to continue to cultivate the arts. So Style Week tonight, it's from 5:30 until roughly 8:30. Have you ever been to a fashion show, Nick?
I have, actually, a few, yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a smaller scale, yep. And it kind of gives you a taste for wanting to go. So I went to Rhode Island Fashion Week last year.
Okay.
It gave me a taste. I was never really into the fashion show idea before,
yep.
But I would love to go and see it in New York.
Wasn't it fun, though?
It was. It's a different atmosphere for me, too, because I haven't gone to something like that before. Yeah. I did last year.
Yeah, so it's a great thing. It was more fun than I expected. We sponsored it. We thought it'd be great public exposure. We are there talking about the Drip Bar. We're actually giving away free power packs. That's one of our most popular IV drips, energy-enhancing drip. We have a limited number of those, so they'll be finite. But our goal is to help educate the public about what we do at Intellectual Medicine, our mission to help people live longer and live younger, to help solve some of the riddles that drag down their sense of well-being. We're out there in the public. And yes, you can. You can also get my book. It'll be there at our station. But, you sit there and I thought it'd be very boring watching these models walk back and forth, but it was really fully entertaining. So it's kind of like watching dance. But anyhow, we're going to be talking next about this season's influenza immunization. Dr. David Lowe will be coming on after the break. And as I mentioned, he's a Renaissance man, a deep thinker, an artistic individual, and will be giving us his thoughts about the flu virus. But I got to also comment, Nick, on the whole Trump care, Obamacare debate. Let's start with the understanding that what came before Obamacare was dismal. Healthcare was in disarray. It's been in disarray for 25, 30 years or more. So Obamacare, like it or hate it, it didn't really change the temperature in the room all that much. And Trump care is just more of the same. These patchwork, half-assed, poorly conceived and implemented healthcare issues. And there are a lot of things I like about current initiatives that are happening out of Washington, but you cannot go down to Washington with a half-baked notion that you're going to fix healthcare but the details don't matter. This is craziness. At some point, I predict, Nick, we will get to that stage where we understand that a universal healthcare system is going to be our best play. It just doesn't add up. I know people. I know a colleague of mine. She is a nurse practitioner. She makes $110,000 a year, and she does not have health insurance. She doesn't qualify for subsidies, and her premium would have been over $1,000 a month. So she said, I'm just not buying it. And if I get sick, I'll just go to the emergency room, and they'll take care of me. And that's what people do when the economic pressure is on. They make decisions in their own best interest, and it has a domino effect. You have all those uninsured people flooding into ERs, and your hospitals can't survive. So I think that this debate will continue into the next election cycle, and we need to take an honest look at the Medicare for All. That could actually liberate doctors in many ways. Anyhow, folks, when we come back, we will shift our focus to the flu shot, talk about this year's variety. What about mercury in that? Is it harmful to us? Should we be worried? Which type of flu shot should we get, if any at all, and who should qualify? I'm Dr. Steve Pedderudi. This is Intellectual Medicine. We'll be back after the break.
Now, back to Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pedderudi. Call in now at 438-WPRO or 1-800-321-WPRO.
Hey, gang, I am back. It's Dr. Steve Pettirudi at Intellectual Medicine flying solo today. Shannon is back at the home front putting together our house. That's right, folks. We are ever on the move. And we went from Providence back to East Greenwich, from city back to suburb. I'll have to fill you in on that. It's really a brilliant maneuver on my part, you know, how to parlay, how to make a small fortune in medicine, as they say. Step number one, start out with a large fortune. It's like how to squander money as you move about. But that's tomorrow's story. In the moment, though, we do have Dr. David Lowe online, and he's going to be coming on to talk about this year's edition of the flu shot. Good morning, Dr. Lowe. Welcome to Intellectual Medicine. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, one of my favorite docs. You've been around for a long time taking care of some of the most sick people in the hospital. And I know from my own experience, Dave, that it was wonderful to have you by my side when we were dealing with some very sick patients. And, you know, we take our good health for granted. And often people that are suffering a consequence of influenza and other infectious illnesses, you see them. I mean, you see the consequence of some of these infections. And a lot of folks think that the flu is something that just old people need to be worried about. But you were telling me earlier that the mortality rate for young people is pretty significant.
It depends on the strain of flu. Every year we have a different strain going around. Some strains can attach to cells down in the lung, and they can cause severe pneumonia. Some strains just attach to the upper respiratory cells, and they cause more bothersome symptoms of upper respiratory, but not pneumonia.
Right. So
every year it will vary. But just a couple of years ago, we had a strain which affected young people, and particularly we lost 2,000 young people to influenza that year.
Now, do we have any idea what kind of strain is coming over, and do we know if the flu shot will protect us?
What they do is that they start studying the flu virus early spring the year before, and they pick out two strains of influenza A, the more serious, and one strain of influenza B, and then they make the vaccine because it takes a few months to make the vaccine.
Gotcha.
So they guess every year. They think they have a good guess this year.
Dave, I'm going to ask you to hang up and dial us back because you're coming in a little bit garbled, and we'll pick you right up on the other side. And when he comes back, one of the things that I want to ask him about is the difference between the trivalent and the quadrivalent immunization. There's one immunization that will protect you against three strains and another that protects you against four. And my question is, why in the world, if you're going to do a flu shot, would you do the lesser of the two? There are also flu shots that have thimerosal in it or mercury as a preservative, but not all of them do. So you have options when it comes to your flu. And here he is back online, Dr. Lowe. Dave, how are you doing over there?
Is this better?
Yeah, coming through much more clear. You know, your words of wisdom cannot be garbled. It's just not worth doing. Hey, you know, what I was talking about just a moment ago as we were gapped out was a difference between the trivalent and the quadrivalent immunization, one protecting against three strains and the other throws in a fourth. Should our listeners request the quadrivalent, wouldn't it be better to go for four instead of three strains?
It depends what vaccines are available. The most serious strains, both the trivalent and the quadrivalent, have two strains of A, and the trivalent has one strain of B, which is usually enough. B is a milder form of flu. It causes less respiratory symptoms, more GI symptoms. This year, they saw another strain of B going around. B doesn't change usually very much from year to year, but since they saw another strain, some of the manufacturers made a vaccine with two strains of B. You can get either one. The most serious form of influenza is influenza A, so you can get either the trivalent or the quadrivalent, whatever's available.
So is there anything bad about doing the quadrivalent? Is there increased risk with it?
No, there's no increased risk with either vaccine. Both vaccines are very safe.
All right, so I want the four. I'm paying my money. I want four instead of three. So where can I get that? Is it is that the one they're giving away or that they're having available at the pharmacies? Do you know?
You just have to ask what they have available. What they do is they stock them up. One of the things you have to take into account is availability of the vaccine. Not a vaccine manufacturer is done outside the United States now, unfortunately, And so it all depends upon what we can get. Like when there was a bad flu year, everybody wanted the vaccine that year. We were running out, and we had difficulty getting the vaccine.
Yeah, but the listeners may not appreciate this, but one of the few things in all of medicine that has been shown to be cost-effective, that is, save the system money, in fact, is a flu shot. And ironically, it's one of the things that there's very little profit motive for the company to make or for doctors to give.
Right.
It's really a public service on both sides. You know, nobody's getting rich giving immunizations. And there's a problem with production, and that's, you highlighted it just now. But turning back to the immunization itself, there are also some of the flu shots that don't have any thimerosal or the mercury preservative in it. Can those be requested, and are they available, do you know?
Most flu shots, if it's an individual dose, it doesn't have thimerosal. The reason why they add the thimerosal in multi-dose vaccines, there's a chance if you keep on taking repeated shots out of that same bottle that you can contaminate, and the thimerosal would prevent bacteria from growing in the vaccine. But most vaccines in the United States are individual dose now.
Right.
So it's when you go into situations where you have a large number of people being vaccinated and they use a large vial to give the vaccine out is when you get into that situation. However, it should be noted that the thimerosal there's been no problems with the thimerosal. This all started because of some doctor incorrectly published that thimerosal could lead to autism. That has all been debugged years ago, but they took the thimerosal out of pediatric vaccines at that point.
Right. I know that in the thimerosal is actually ethyl mercury, which is cleared more quickly
right.
than the methyl mercury, which people justifiably have some fear of. So you're right. The echoes of thimerosal still reverberate, and some people have sort of pasted fear in immunizations to that old information. But let's talk about the side effects. You know, I've had a lot of people say to me, every year I get the flu, I get sick. It gives me a cold. What's going on?
The side effects of influenza are mainly local, related to the vaccine. In other words, tenderness at the site of injection. Some people have more of a reaction than others. But people don't actually get influenza from the vaccine because it's a killed vaccine.
Right.
You just have to remember the time of year that you get the influenza vaccine. You get the influenza vaccine in the fall when people get a lot of respiratory infections. So let's say you get the vaccine, your kid brings home a new virus, you get a cold, and it happens around the vaccine, and then you're convinced at that point that the vaccine gave you cold symptoms.
Now, how about timing of the flu, of the immunization? Does it have a limited lifespan? That is, if I get a shot in September, is it too early? Is my immunization going to wear off when the flu actually hits?
The vaccine lasts for a season. What is a season? Well, it's somewhere between 6 and 9 months. And so if you get we advise people to get the vaccine before the end of October, because at that time, the influenza activity usually starts to peak. But you can see what the flu activity is in your area by going to the CDC website, and they'll have a flu map, and they'll tell you if there's anything going on. So if you want to get it towards the middle to the end of October rather than the beginning of September, you get an extra month of protection out of it.
That's pretty good new information. Now, we know, is a flu shot a required immunization? Do Rhode Islanders have to get it, or do school children have to get it?
I can tell you, for healthcare workers, you have to get it if you're a healthcare worker to protect
right.
the people. And it's recommended for adults over age 6 months. I'm not sure what the actual law in Rhode Island, but anybody over age 6 months should be getting a flu shot.
I think it's important, too, our listeners know. Well, you know, let's hold Dr. Lowe and Dave. We're going to bring you back after the break so we can get a few more questions answered. But first up, hello, Rhode Island. We are back. It's Dr. Pedderuti at Intellectual Medicine. And stay tuned, folks. We're going to answer the question, can fluoride hurt an unborn baby? What's the best age to start playing football at? And what about artificial sweeteners? Can they actually make you fat and heavy? But first, we have Dr. David Lowe, infectious disease specialist out of Kent Hospital. If you ever have it in mind to develop sepsis, make sure you go to Dr. David Lowe at Kent Hospital, because he's got the tools to help you get better. But we're talking about the flu shot. And, Dave, I was wondering about the flu shot. Suppose I'm reluctant. You know, I really don't want to get the flu shot. I'm a young, healthy individual. I'm going to wait and see what happens. And if the flu starts to really kick, I'll get it then. How long does the shot take to be effective?
It takes 2 weeks after the shot. So you have to have mystical powers to know whether you're going to be exposed when in that two-week period. So that's very important. You plan to get it in the recommended time zone before the flu is actually in your area, because it's not going to help you for 2 weeks.
I gotcha. And, you know, you can be a vector. That is one of the reasons that some people should consider this, is because while they may not even get the flu, they can carry it to someone else. Isn't it possible for somebody to be exposed to the flu, carry the virus, bring it to somebody else, go visit grandma, for instance, spew virus on her and get her sick when they don't actually get sick themselves?
A healthy person may have a very mild disease. They think they have a little cold or something, and they go visit grandma, give her a big hug and a kiss, and poor granny is very ill within a week afterwards.
For God's sakes, people, don't kill grandma. This is important.
Or newborn babies.
Newborn babies. What's that? I like grandmothers and newborn babies, Dave. I don't think that they should be an endangered species.
No.
And, you know, you were saying earlier it's a bit of a civic duty in many ways. And I concur, especially those who are dealing with the public, and particularly the public that is at risk. So, really, we're talking about anybody in the healthcare field. I would say, you know, the service staff at Denny's, you got to get immunized. The old people in there, they need help.
Look what happened with just healthcare workers. We encourage healthcare workers, but only 75% of them got the vaccine up until recently, when the health department required all healthcare workers to get the vaccine. Now we have 95% immunization of healthcare workers.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, do you want a healthcare worker taking care of you who might be harboring the influenza?
Yeah, that seems paradoxical. But now the death rate is estimated from the flu to be 32,000 per year, and yet I've read competing opinions that claim that rate is severely inflated and it's actually only 300 or 400. What's the information out there?
No, what it is it's called influenza-related deaths. So that includes, let's say you get influenza and then you get pneumonia afterwards, could even be bacterial, and you die of that, which is a frequent, right, frequent sequence of events. That's considered an influenza-related death. They're very careful about accumulating those. On a mild year, we lose 30,000 people. Bad year, we lose 50 to 55,000 in the United States. Those, and I would encourage everybody to go to cdc.gov.
Right.
And it's a fun site, and they'll answer your questions about a lot of things. And they're pretty neutral. They don't really have an axe to grind one way or the other. They're very pro-vaccine because it prevents a lot of disease. And preventing disease is the best way to have medical care. It's cheap, and you don't wind up in the emergency room costing yourself thousands of dollars.
That's
the other
advice.
Question that people say, well, I got the flu vaccine. I still got the flu. That's true. The vaccine's not perfect, especially in older people. You can still get the flu, but it's much milder. And I would view the flu vaccine in elderly people as really, it prevents death from influenza.
It's important.
So if you look at the studies, older people who take the vaccine have much less, much lower mortality rate than if they didn't get it, regardless of whether they got a mild case of influenza.
You know, at IM120, Intellectual 120, we are fully in support of not dying. And we find it that you don't get to be 120 if you die of influenza. But let's talk about a booster. If I'm at risk and I've got a weak immune system, should I get a booster shot? I've read somewhere where that actually can work better.
The problem with influenza is you can have a two-phase epidemic. For example, most of the times we see the first wave ends by about March. But sometimes with a severe epidemic, you can have a second wave in the summertime. And if that seems to occur, it's worth getting another influenza shot.
So let's extend that logic. If the second wave can occur, and you've already told us that by the time it hits, it's too late to really benefit, would it be sensible for some people to just get the shot twice a year, since it only lasts about 6 months?
I would go 6 to 9 months.
Yep.
I would just basically keep track of what the influenza map shows. There'll be lots of information as whether the flu activity has subsided. The other option for people over 65 is a vaccine with it's kind of like a high-dose vaccine. People over 65 make less antibody in response to the vaccine. So there's a new vaccine out, which they should consider. There haven't been a lot of studies with it, but it contains more of the flu virus in it, killed flu virus, to give you a bigger immune response.
Great. Well, this information has been really valuable. And if you stay tuned, Dave, I'm going to tell you the right age to let the youth start football. So I know that's important to you. We want our kids playing football. Damn it, it's an American sport. And all this nonsense about hurting brains is way overinflated. There are some people in whom the brain is their least valuable organ.
I don't think that's you're a fair objective about football, because you played a very good game of football, if I remember correctly.
Once upon a time, the older I get, the better I was. Hey, Dave, thanks for being on. We'll talk again. That's
very
David
good.
Lowe, everybody, a Renaissance man, a great infectious disease specialist, an empathic human being, and an artistic photographer, giving us some really valuable information about the flu shot. You know, it's still controversial, though, Nick. You've got, like, the younger cohort. I can't imagine folks in your generation are rushing to get a flu shot.
Oh, no. And I probably should.
Yeah?
But I'm not.
Well, there's something to be said for freedom of choice. And there's something to be said for keeping your own immune system strong. But let's talk about youth football for a second. You know, a game that I truly love, the game of football. And a new study came out, and they're looking at a correlation between age of onset of football and subsequent neurologic development. And a pretty well-done study uncovered that if kids start football prior to the age of 12, there's a higher incidence of behavioral, neurologic, and psychological problems, including depression and academic difficulties. Now, I love the game and played it throughout high school and college, but I've got to reinforce this philosophy. Folks, there's nothing to be gained by putting a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid in a helmet and having him run into other people. I love the game, don't get me wrong, and I'm an advocate of it. The only football that you should play until high school, in my opinion, is flag football. There's nothing to be gained. I talked to a high school coach once, and you know, my boys all played football, and my son's playing it now. And my daughter would have played if she could have. She was a stud. But I talked to a high school coach once, and he said, I asked him this, do the kids playing youth football have an advantage? He said, Steve, the first thing I have to do when they become freshmen is unteach them all the bad habits they've picked up. And you know, it's interesting detail. O.J. Simpson, when he was playing youth football, you know what position he played? Offensive tackle.
Wow.
So, you know, who gets to play quarterback? Answer? The coach's son.
Yeah.
It's like, so I look, stay away from youth football. And, you know, the traumatic brain injury debate will go on. I do think that there are things we can do to protect brains even after they've been hit. And that has a lot to do with using good antioxidants to neutralize free radicals that are damaging the brain, not only in football players, but in everybody. You know, at the Drip Bar, we're advocating the use of intravenous antioxidants. It's our philosophy that antioxidants are critical to preserving your immune function and to fighting the decay of aging. And we know that after age 50, we make more and more free radicals and less antioxidants to neutralize them. We also know that trauma increases free radicals, and we know that free radicals are toxic to the brain. So if you put these facts together, you start to realize that, you know, the best thing to do maybe after a football game is to get a big dose of antioxidants to help you recover from all the trauma you've had. And if you're Dr. Lowe, Dave Lowe was talking about the value of immunization. You know, if you don't have a good immune system, you can take all the flu shots you want. It's not going to do anything. Immunologic senescence, or the loss of immune function, is universal and happens as early as the 40s. Using the proper supplements and lifestyle, including hormone support, can enhance your immune function. That's true. Testosterone and other hormones are part of your immune system. Now, when we come back, is fluoride harming that unborn baby? And do artificial sweeteners actually make you fat? I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. We'll see you after the break.
Now, back to Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pederuti. Call in now at 438-WPRO or 1-800-321-WPRO.
Hi, everybody, and a happy Style Week weekend to you. You have an opportunity to see the best of Rhode Island fashion and models up at the Convention Center. If you're going to go, it's from 5:30 till 8 o'clock. Come by our booth at Intellectual Medicine. Say hi to me and Shannon and the rest of the gang. But you got to get there early, folks. It was a sellout last night, Nick. Place was packed. It was very impressive seeing all these models. You know, they have that model face, man. They're walking down that runway. They don't smile. Nothing.
Nope. All business. It's like such a serious face.
Yeah, you know, and I was talking to one of the models after, and she said they do that so folks will look at the clothing and not be drawn to their face. Thought that was an interesting detail. Anyhow, so we know Nick may not be getting that flu shot, so do not kiss grandma this year. Just, you know, nice handshake. How about a fist bump? There you go.
Fist bump.
Fist bump, grandma. You'll be safe. So fluoride in the water. Fluoride was put in the water 75 years ago and is hailed as one of the most significant health care advances since there's been such a drop in tooth decay. In Rhode Island, 80% of the water is fluorinated, and in some municipalities, it is not. Now, some people feel like this is an imposition of government on personal health decisions. Why put fluoride in the water for everybody? Why not let people make their own decision? There are other ways to get fluoride in your body besides putting it in the water. Now, there's a new study that tied fluoride exposure in pregnant women to lower cognitive function in their babies. It appears that the developing fetus may be more sensitive to fluoride than any other stage of human growth and development. The same finding did not occur in children and adults. What does this mean? It certainly is not proven. This is one observational study. It was done in Mexico. It was done very well. So I think it's information worth contemplating. I think for my money, I would consider not using fluorinated water and avoiding fluoride throughout pregnancy. But here's a problem. Pregnancy also accelerates the potential damage to your teeth as the baby leaches nutrients from you. So you've got to strike that balance. If you're going to avoid fluoride while you're pregnant or contemplating pregnancy, you've got to double down on your dental health. And from the world of weight loss. Now, you know, Nick, we have solved the disease entity of obesity in intellectual medicine.
Yes,
we've been doing this for 20 years. We understand that it is not a function of willpower, that diet and exercise will fail inevitably for significant weight loss. Now, every now and then you'll see a freak that loses lots of weight through diet and exercise. And that's the aberration. The weight almost always comes back. Obesity and excess adiposity is a metabolic disorder. It affects the gut hormones and it affects the neurotransmitters. What about artificial sweeteners? You know, these are touted as a means of helping people control their weight. Well, it turns out that artificial sweeteners, sucralose, aspartame, stevia, they have an effect on the gut that changes the way it handles sugar, actually making the gut absorb more sugar. Well, that's not a good thing. Absorbing sugar increases your risk of diabetes and getting fat. And in fact, we have found that when people switch from sugary beverages to artificial sweeteners, no benefit to the weight loss. Look, I don't love sugar as far as a nutrient, but at least it's honest, right? You know what you're getting. Artificial sweeteners, absolutely no value with weight loss. It is far more complicated. We'll continue talking about that. And for those of you on the East Bay, hang tight. The East Bay Center for Intellectual Medicine is rapidly developing, and we'll be bringing all of this life-changing and life-enhancing medicine to you soon. But next up, we have a caller, Marty from Lincoln, wants some advice on a sculpting agent. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. I just want to know your advice because I see the advertisement. It's like a one-day procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's where I carry all my weight is in the abdomen. And it said like cool sculpting, one-day procedure. And then, you know,
right.
What was your advice on that or your input on it?
Yeah, no, I have strong opinions on that, Marty. I think that it is way oversold. You know, cool sculpting is what you do after your percent body fat has been addressed. And if you don't know your percent body fat, you know, you're throwing money into the wind. I saw a patient once, Marty, who came to me. She had a body mass index of 40. Now, for folks who can't translate that into a visual picture, just consider somebody significantly obese. Spent $10,000 cool sculpting. $10,000. How do you do that to someone when their need is medical weight loss? So the approach that we advocate, and you know, we have body sculpting procedures at Intellectual Medicine. We have one called the Perfect Curve. It's an injectable enzyme that dissolves fat. It's a fraction of the cost. However, we will not use it until we get you to that weight. Now, that mid-abdominal weight you're talking about is hormonally driven. And you can lose weight everywhere in your body, and it'll be stuck in that midsection. And if you are, if you look at the people in the ads, right? There are models that have a little blump, a little bump of fat.
Right.
If you can grab that fat pad with your hand, then it's more significant, and it deserves to be treated first with weight loss and likely with bioidentical hormone. You know, estrogen and testosterone help dissolve that fat pad in the midsection for both men and women. And one of the other concerns that I have with targeted sculpting, what's to stop the fat from coming back? You know, if you have a hormonal prerogative driving the fat to go there and you freeze it off, it has a chance to come back later. And one thing we've learned from liposuction, another problem that could occur, you get rid of the fat in one location, it appears elsewhere. They found in one study, Marty, the women who were getting liposucked in the abdomen were getting fat arms. I mean, so in summary, you've got to affect nutritional behavior first. A very good question, Marty, and good luck with your body sculpting. I think it's a worthy pursuit.
Well, maybe I'll come down to see you then, because I was thinking of doing that, because that's the only place I carry. I'm pretty athletic, but it never goes away.
You know, come by. I'd love to consult. We'll talk about it, and if it's right for you, we'll sign it off, and you'll feel better going forward. Thanks for the call, Marty, and thanks for listening to our show. Folks, up next is Tony DeJesus, a Rhode Island institution. The Big Blue Bug Solutions is on deck. Stay with WPRO, your voice of Southern New England. I am Dr. Steve Pettirudi, wishing you 120 youthful years.